Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl, and thanks for listening to this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. Today, a fairly new CEO, actually, whose predecessor was wildly successful and served, well, for a very long time, as you will hear. But today, there are some headwinds to the business model of this company, and he's got to figure out just how to handle that, even though the business that he's in is kind of famous for being steeped in a whole lot of tradition. This week's Corner Office Podcast is PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Jay Monahan, welcome to the program.
Guy, thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
So listen, I don't mean this to sound pejorative in any way, but what do you do all day, man, besides walk around golf courses?
Well, we the PGA Tour today is, we have six tours around the world. The tour that is most known is the PGA Tour, but we'll have over 140 tournaments throughout the world this season. And we have close to 1,000 people that are working day in and day out, bringing the PGA Tour to the world, to the masses. And, you know, in its simplest form, what I do is I work with a lot of great people to bring forward the great stories of our athletes, of our tournaments, and of the incredible impact that the tour has on charity and community on a worldwide basis.
And that's everything your folks do, from logistics to sponsorships to taking care of the golfers. I mean, all of that.
It is, you know, and I'm not sure this is known, but our tournaments are licensed. We're a 501c6. We're a membership organization. Uh-huh. Our tournaments are licensed to 501c3s who stage, manage, and operate the events.
So we should say those numbers are all parts of the tax code and varying tax implications there.
Correct. Right. And so last year we generated through our tournaments $180 million for charity. We have a lot of people that work at the tour that work closely with our tournaments to help them identify ways to, you know, increase their sales revenue, continue to get deeper penetration into their markets, and ultimately to grow their impact. And that's a key part of what we do. And that really is our scorecard at the end of the year. And then each of these tournaments, we'll have, for example, this week in New Orleans, we'll have close to 1,800 volunteers that will give 24 hours of their time over the course of the week to help execute the event. So we are a distributed model. We have a huge impact on the communities where we play, but the community itself has a huge impact by stepping forward and providing that level of volunteerism and service.
So how do you guys make money? I mean, let's get down to brass tacks here.
We are the tour is a membership organization. Right. We're a pass-through organization. So ultimately, at the end of the day, the money that we make is the money that's returned to the communities, the net impact of our season. So, like I said, $180 million last year. That number continues to grow, $2.65 billion since the tour was started. And so that's the net proceeds. But obviously, each week our tournaments, our players are playing for prize money. And that's our responsibility to our organization to maximize playing and financial opportunities.
How much of your time do you spend dealing with the athletes, the golfers?
A fair amount. I try and get out to most of our tournaments on the PGA Tour. I'll be in New Orleans this weekend on Saturday and Sunday. And I try and allocate a significant portion of my time to be out there and to talk to our players, get an understanding of what the cadence is amongst the membership. Obviously, when you've got 250 members, you have different perspectives. But I think, like any other organization, it's important to understand what your key constituents are thinking and doing, and that they understand where we are. So that's a key part of what I do and what our team does. I'm certainly not alone in that respect.
A little bit of nomenclature here, right? You run the PGA Tour, which is not the PGA, the Professional Golfers Association.
Correct. The PGA of America, we were actually one and the same organization up until 1968 and then separated, but we are two separate organizations, but we work very closely together.
You've followed a guy, Tim Fincham, who had this job for, I think it's 22 years, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and you've been on the job for a couple of years. What's it like trying to take over an organization that's been run by one guy for 22 years, which is tradition-bound in a lot of ways, and yet now you find yourself in a news, media, and sports environment that is changing almost faster than you can turn around?
Well, I think it's to the first part of your question, Tim did an incredible job leading the PGA Tour for the 22 years he was the leader. And I had the last 2.5 years of his tenure, I worked closely alongside him as deputy commissioner. So I got an opportunity to really see firsthand what made him so exceptional. You know, during that time frame, you're seeing, you know, a massive amount of change and disruption in the media and technology landscape, and that obviously affects what we're doing. But we spend a significant amount of time thinking about really looking at it all through the lens of the fan. If you think about what the fan wants, how they want to consume your media, how you evolve in a way that's in keeping with the way the fan behavior is evolving, then ultimately that's going to lead you to change that we think is positive. And we've had a number of changes. I would just point out on two fronts. One, you look back at this game, which, as you note, is rich in tradition and has great values. And really what we've done over the last couple of years is on the technology front is, you look at, we were the first sport to live stream on Twitter. We've made aggressive investments in VR and AR, partnerships with Intel and Microsoft. Kai, 5 years ago when you came to a PGA Tour tournament, we didn't allow you to bring your cell phone on site. A year ago, we didn't let you take video. And we've tried to eliminate a lot of those friction points to take advantage of the social currency that you see from our fans week in and week out, and to showcase what makes the PGA Tour so exceptional. So we've continued to, I think we have a steady stream of innovation. It certainly precedes my time in this role. And we've also innovated around formats and schedule and just trying to, again, going back to the fan, what is the optimal schedule for the game? We're going to make some significant changes going into next year. We'll move the Players' Championship, which is our flagship event here at TPC Sawgrass, in May back to March. The PGA of America is moving the PGA Championship to May. And then our FedEx Cup playoffs, which are now 11 years old, will move to August and will precede the end of college football and the NFL. And again, we think owning the month of August, having cadence to our schedule, we have big events March through July, and then these FedEx Cup playoff events with great significance is going to be a great development.
So, you know, that's really interesting, the idea that you are counter-programming an entire sport against, college football and maybe, the end of hockey season or whatever, right? I mean, you're actually thinking sort of in those terms where you got to get the eyeballs.
We are, and this exercise, which goes back several years, was not just a domestic exercise. It was a global exercise. So you look at English Premier League, you look at soccer, you look at all the other big sports and when they are at their peaks. And we identified August as an opportunity to own an important part of the calendar year and to finish strong. And we also looked at March as an opportunity for us to continue to elevate the players.
Well, now that you bring that up, let me ask you a related question, which is how much is it on your mind that, you know, you've got the PGA Tour brand to worry about and you've got the PGA Tour as an enterprise, but in essence, your stars are, and this is not the right legal term, but they're basically like freelancers and contractors with you.
Yeah, they are independent contractors. That's our business model. And, I think that as it relates to our players, we're very, like I said earlier, we spend a lot of time working very closely with them. They are a big part of the changes and the innovation that we're making. These are not ideas that are made in a back room and brought forward. Everything that we're doing in concert with our players. And we have a governance system in place that I think is outstanding. We have a player advisory council of 16 players representing the broad and kind of the depth or the breadth of our membership. And you'll have the likes of Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and Matt Kuchar and a number of other players that serve there. We meet three times a year and lay out where we are with our business and some ideas that we're thinking of implementing to get their feedback. And then we've got a 9-person board, and we have 4 players that sit on our board. And that's obviously a great asset to have. Those players are Davis Love, who's his fifth term, Johnson Wagner, Kevin Streelman, and Charlie Hoffman.
What do you do, though? I mean, for all the Twitter live streaming you're doing and all the calendar rejiggering you're doing, what do you do about fans like me? I mean, I'm not a player, right? I'm a casual golf fan. It's not ever going to happen. I played a couple of par threes, and I'm just not good. But anyway, so I like to watch on television, but only under one condition. Well, two, actually. One is sort of Sunday of a big tournament, and really only if, like, Rory McIlroy or Tiger or, like, maybe Phil Mickelson is in like the final two pairings, you know? What do you do about people like me?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing over the last several years is there's such depth to our membership. You look right now and there are, you know, you could argue there are 30 to 35 big names. And so week in and week out, we're seeing that we've had – our tournaments are telling us this is the strongest field they've ever had. Hmm. And that goes back to depth. And because of that depth, it's creating a lot of what we call competitive friction. So when I go to bed, you go to bed on Saturday night, there's a decent chance a player that you are attached to or that you've followed is going to have an opportunity to win. And so and really it's – to answer your question, it's been a matter of making certain that when you look at all of our platforms, all of our digital video platforms, that we are telling that story to as broad an audience as possible so that when that opportunity presents itself, you're aggregating the largest audience that you possibly can. And our ratings so far this year, Kai, are up 41% on broadcast, 25% on cable. And it's been that's been a steady growth that we've seen as we've seen more stars emerge, particularly over the last couple of years. And obviously the reemergence of Tiger, Phil's win in Mexico City, and obviously Sergio.
Well, right. Well, except for Sergio, you know, cratering at the Masters, but I guess that's a whole different deal, right?
It's a hard game. It can get you at any given point in time.
Is it like a prerequisite to have this job to play golf, by the way? Do you have to play?
I do, and I play as much as I possibly can. And I don't play it as well or nearly as well as what you see when you watch the PGA Tour or any of our tours, but it's the greatest game going. And it's a generational game. My dad turned 75 in early May, and he's still beating me, and I play with my two younger brothers. It's a game that, you know, you can tee off at sunrise and you can close the day at Topgolf at night. It's just always on, and it's you know, the character traits that it teaches young people, and it teaches people like me, and it reminds us all every single day, and the fact that it's such a great, healthy outdoor sport. There's so many great elements to it that I can never be doing it enough.
What's your worst nightmare then? What's the thing that keeps you up at night?
You know, it's usually things that are outside of your control. Like I said, we have a great team in place, and we know exactly where we're going. And more importantly, it's all about our athletes, and they're meaningful, they're purposeful, they're committed to what we're doing, and they're committed to beating each other up week in and week out. But in any business, it's generally the things that, you know, that you can't control. But I think the one thing that would keep anybody up at night that's in the sports, media, and entertainment business is just the dynamic change that we're seeing in fan consumption, fan behavior, and media mm-hmm. platforms, and where that's all going. And some of the smartest minds in the world can't tell you that with any clear definition. So really understanding that, but understanding it from the lens of your fans is something that keeps us up at night.
Spitball it for me, though. If you have this job for 20 years, 22 years like Tim Fincham did, what does the PGA Tour look like when you step down?
Well, I think it's you know, it is the preeminent global tour in the world. We now have 85 players from 25 countries. Golf returned to the Olympics in 16 after a 112-year hiatus. I think you're going to continue to see more global stars from all of the leading markets throughout the world. So you'll see, as strong as the penetration is here in the U.S. and the interest is in the PGA Tour, I think you're going to see great growth internationally. Particularly as we go into invest in more markets. We've now got six offices located throughout the world. We're in Beijing, we're in Tokyo, we're in Seoul, we're in Kuala Lumpur, we're in London. And, you know, we're going to continue to invest where our talent is developing and really try and be local rather than exporting our product, be on the ground, telling the stories of our stars and being a part of every marketplace where we can make a difference. So I think you'll just see. I just think you'll see in a day, in an age, in a world where it seems at times that things are getting less and less personal. A sport that makes such a huge impact on every community where it's played, that stands for the values that it stands for. Like I said, that is so multi-generational. I think it's in a great position to compete for mindshare to compete from a participation standpoint, and I just think you're going to see it continue to grow.
Well, let me ask you about that, though, because it sounds like you like things the way they are, and yes, you know, sure, CEOs have to say that their enterprise needs to grow, but where's the growth for you?
The growth for the PGA Tour is, you know, you look at our business model, primary revenue streams are sponsorship, and we're so fortunate to have great sponsors across our tour and have long-term commitments from the likes of FedEx with the FedEx Cup for 10 years and Charles Schwab with the Charles Schwab Cup on PGA Tour Champions for 20 years and Web.com on the Web.com for 10 years. So continuing to make certain that we are we're bringing sponsors forward, we're creating the right value equation for them, and we're in long-term relationships is always going to be critical. That represents more than half of our revenue. And then you've got media rights and how you're leveraging your media platforms. And that is a significant growth opportunity, we think, both domestically and internationally, so long as we continue to do the things that we expect to do as it relates to bringing more fans into our sport. And I think longer term, you know, just given the fact that we are on all those platforms and we have such a strong brand, there are opportunities to be to develop more direct relationships with consumers by leveraging our brand and getting into some other businesses. We've had great success with PGA Tour Superstores and our partnership with Arthur Blank. You're going to see us continue to bring our brand forward in ways that, again, directly reach consumer and we think can help grow the game.
Jay Monahan, CEO, actually the commissioner, right, of the PGA Tour. Jay, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kai.
That was Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour commissioner. I hope you learned something about golf and the business thereof. If you're enjoying this podcast or if you really like just this episode, let us know. Would you leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts? We appreciate it. It makes a difference, more possibly than you could know. The Corner Office Podcast is produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace on the Radio is produced by Nancy Fargalis. Yatar Nieves is the Executive Director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the Senior Vice President and General Manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We're back in a couple of weeks.